That's with my colleague and friend Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. It is June 1942. Chester Nimitz, commanding the Pacific Fleet against the Imperial Japanese Navy, has three carriers to send out against the combined Japanese fleet headed to Midway. Three carriers. One badly damaged at Coral Sea, the Yorktown, had to be repaired overnight. How they did it is a miracle. But in any event, three carriers to win the Pacific right now. That dire moment is always with us. And we welcome Professor James Holmes of the Naval War College to help us understand the most recent excitement in Pentagon when they or someone has realized we have three carriers or the equivalent to face the combined might of the People's Liberation Army Navy. Professor, a very good evening to you. When did this come to the Pentagon that China is ready to send out its fleet and we're not ready to answer? Good evening to you.
Gentlemen, good to be with you this evening, as always. Well, you know, I think it's, you know, sometimes I fall back on science fiction. There was a term in Robert Heinlein's famous book, Stranger in a Strange Land, the idea of grokking something, G-R-O-K, which is basically to feel something in your guts. It's one thing to know something intellectually. We've known China was a problem for a while now, but to actually feel it in your guts and actually act on that, on that conviction that China is a problem. I think those are two different things. So again, I think the intellect has led the actually feeling it in your guts and actually started to do something about it. Plus, after all this time, after all the hoopla, after the Cold War, and basically saying, "Well, peace is at hand. We're not going to have any more military conflict in the future, and so forth." I mean, that's a very strong signal to send to the force. We basically almost laid down arms in the 1990s at about the time that China was starting to build a serious navy and a very serious force to do things in the Western Pacific. So we've been on an opposite trajectories, and we're trying to flip that script right now.
The quote in the Politico story by a former Joint Chiefs Vice Chair, General John Hyten, is the Chinese just ran rings around us. They knew exactly what we were going to do before we did it. James, this suggests that there's been, what, an ostrich living at the Pentagon for X number of years about the Chinese ambition? I mean, I understand our colleague Gordon Chang here with us is one person, but he's been very clear on national television for years that the Chinese ambition is to conquer the earth. Did the Pentagon not believe it, James?
Well, you know, I think it's one thing to understand something in your mind, but not necessarily in your heart. I think that we formed our opinions of China. I mean, that's sort of our longstanding cultural opinions of China back during the Cold War, during the awful times in the 1950s through the 1970s under Mao Zedong. And I think there was a very dismissive attitude towards China and towards its navy. When I only started doing China work back in about 2004, it was amazing. The conventional wisdom about China was that China could never build a serious navy. If it did, it would take a half century or more. And this was just the dominant opinion. And something that I and some people of like mind started to try to chip away at, but it does take a long time to weed out those sort of assumptions. It's basically an assumption about China's capacity to go to sea that has long outlived its usefulness. If it was ever true at all,
Gordon, you've been very clear for a number of years. Is there a moment you can think of when finally the Pentagon listened?
No. And I'm not even sure they're listening right now, because we see a Pentagon which very well may be incapable of accomplishing what it intends to do. But I'm not even sure that senior Pentagon officers are of the mind of actually doing what needs to be done.
You have a question for the professor.
So, Jim, you talked about the Pentagon flipping the script. Can they do that?
Yeah, I think we can actually. I would give a shout out to the U.S. Marine Corps for heading up this effort. The Marines are thinking about how to use geography, basically how to make the Marines back into an adjunct to the fleet. Use island warfare. Putting small bodies of Marines. on the Ryukyu Islands and places like that in order to do sensing, to do reconnaissance, and to fire missiles, basically to bottle up the PLA Navy and Air Force within the first island chain and deny them that maneuver space. So and the Marines actually done quite well under Commandant Berger, whose term unfortunately is coming to an end this summer. But it looks like he has a like-minded successor coming along, assuming he's confirmed by the Senate. So again, I think if you can do these sorts of things, if we can follow the Marines' lead, what we basically need to do is announce to China that it is not going to be able to prevail in a short war in the Western Pacific. If we can string things out long enough, if we can convince Beijing that they will not be able to get that short war, if we can give ourselves time, that's the critical ingredient in order to mass forces in the Western Pacific and do all the things that we may need to do in order to defeat China if we get into a fight with them.
The incident in the Taiwan Straits most recently, a Chinese warship deliberately threatening a Canadian and American warship, is that something the Pentagon understands, that this is not a toy that's going on out there? It is a Chinese fleet that is confident and aggressive. Does the Pentagon talk that way to itself?
Yeah, it sort of depends. There is no Pentagon. There's a wide range of opinion on all of these things. But I think, in a sense, it's almost back to the future. This kind of stuff happened a lot during the Cold War. I mean, think back to 1988 and the famous Black Sea bumping incident when a U.S. Warship was making a freedom of navigation demonstration in the Black Sea, and a Soviet warship came up and bumped it. Literally had a deliberate collision. This is the kind of stuff that went on a lot during the Cold War. So in a sense, we're sort of getting back to those sorts of practices. I don't like the gamesmanship, but the fact is that it does happen when you get into a protracted strategic competition such as we're in with China now.
I just puzzle about the thinking of a military that is not reading the same headlines we're reading. It's a puzzle, James. Those of us who are outside the military wonder what the decision chain is. The Chinese Minister of Defense, so-called the general, made threats at Shangri-La. Threats! I mean, what do we do with those threats, James? We report on them. Do we say, never mind, we've got this in check? Or do we say the threat is to be taken seriously? When an aggressor threatens you, reload.
Yeah, well, I mean, just speaking on behalf of the naval services, I think we actually do take it seriously. If you look past a lot of all the rhetoric and whatnot, if you look at what's actually happening in the defense industry and what the services are doing to equip themselves for a future fight, there are good things happening out there, such as the reinvention of a very long range anti-ship missile capability that used to exist during the Cold War. I mean, there are good things happening out there. So I hesitate to get too far into basically, taking China at its word on its threats and so forth. Again, we're all old Cold Warriors, and so we can actually remember a lot of this foolishness that went on with the Soviet Union for many years as well. So in a sense, I guess I'm a little bit less worried about the whole thing than others might be.
Gordon, you have a question. We have a couple of minutes.
So, Jim, in 2017, there were two fatal accidents with our Arleigh Burke destroyers with civilian craft. Obviously, problems in the decision making and other aspects of the Navy. Have those been remedied?
I think we actually made a fair amount of progress on that. I certainly, coming from the surface warfare community, I see it right there on the island where the War College sits. The surface warfare school has reinstituted basically educational programs that we had when I was a junior officer. Around the turn of the century, it almost felt like the Pentagon or in the naval services, they almost lost their minds. I used to teach engineering and related topics to young officers back in the 2003 timeframe. The Navy leadership decided that was too costly, and therefore we're going to not give young officers heading to their first ships any education in the schoolhouse. We were going to hand them a stack of CDs, send them to their ships, and tell them to self-educate, which is insane. I never would have qualified for anything under that system. And I think it's just another one of those things we're trying to get past. But again, the Navy has made a good faith effort to reinstitute that. There's a lot of waterfront training that goes on as far as navigation and piloting and these sorts of things. So I hope. I haven't visited with the fleet in a couple of years since before COVID, but I believe we're actually making progress on those things.
James Holmes, the holder of the Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy at the Naval War College. Gordon Chang, I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.